Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, folks.
And welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burris. Here, as always, with my co-host and A to Z Sports Tennessee writer, Zach Reagan. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I talk everything balls every week here on the Big Orange Podcast. If you want to listen to it more, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple, Spotify, and subscribe. If you subscribe, you won't miss the episodes when we drop them on Mondays. YouTube.com, type in A to Z Sports if you want to see the show. And subscribe there. You'll get our show. You'll get clips from the show, any extra content. And you also get all of the content from A to Z Sports itself, Titans, anything else that they talk about, NFL content. It's awesome. So subscribe there. Hit that little notification bell on YouTube, too. At Charlie underscore Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Natural, and A to Z Sports.com for all the stuff that Zach and I write. Zach, you've been a busy, busy man, even though it is the biggest lull of the off season. You're cranking out that content, but you were on vacation last week for the show. Had Barrett's Leon. It was awesome. But how are you? You feeling good? Getting back on the grind here?
Yeah, it's anytime you come back from a week of vacation in the middle of summer. Whenever you get back, it kind of feels like football season because camps are getting ready to start going and ramping up in training camp in the NFL. College camp far behind, so. It's still a little warm, pretty hot right now, middle of the summer, but football is almost in the air.
It is real close. SEC Media Days starts today, Monday, whatever day, July 18th. I've lost all track of time. July 18th, it is today. Brian Kelly up first, I believe, at SEC Media Days. The SEC Network posted this like hype video for the season. It's so close. You can smell that grass. You get the tent ready to take it down to campus because it's, you know, we got a tailgate here before too long. And Tennessee is on a Thursday. We start on a Thursday, so we get to do it even earlier than everybody else. I'm like, my heartbeat is going up as I say all of that, man. It's so close. But before we get to the football, on today's show, we're going to talk about SEC Media Days and what's happening with Tennessee. And then we're going to talk about our top five most important players for Tennessee. And this is really, I think talking about this topic is really symbolic. Because when you start talking about this is when football season is close. That's when you start doing position previews, game previews, top five most important players, things like that. I mean, what are we talking? Just a little over what? 6 weeks?
What, a month
six,
and a half? Yeah.
Yeah, five. I think in terms of actual games that, you know, SEC games don't start until, I guess, September. Tennessee's game September 2nd, and we're the very first SEC game of the season, I think. But I want to say, what, the week before, probably August 20-something. So just right around the corner. But we're going to talk about top five most important players, SEC Media Days. But first, Tennessee baseball, we got to talk about them one more time because the MLB draft was last night and the Tennessee showed out three players taken in the initial night of the draft. One player went to your beloved Mets, Zach, wearing a Mets hat as we speak. Did you have any initial thoughts on the MLB draft with Tennessee baseball?
I was expecting Drew Gilbert and Jordan Beck to go a little bit earlier than they did. It kind of felt like Kennedy Chandler when he slid down the draft boards in the NBA draft a couple of weeks ago when he finally ended up with the Memphis Grizzlies via some transactions that happened there. That was my initial thought. It was they draw a little bit, but you know, they were still two first-round picks last night, and Drew Gilbert, who landed with the Houston Astros at the number 28 pick, I believe, and then Jordan Beck. He was in the mix for the Rockies at number 10, so it wasn't a surprise that the Rockies took him at number 30, I believe, is where Jordan Beck. What a perfect fit for him. He's a power hitter to go. Gets to play in Coors Field as a college hitter. Rockies fans shouldn't have to wait too long to see him in the majors. If he starts performing pretty well pretty early in the minor leagues, you know, maybe Rockies fans could see him by the next season. A little early, probably more 2024 before you see him in the bigs, but it's certainly possible if he hits well. We've seen guys come up pretty quickly before that were college bats like that, so I think that's a perfect fit for Jordan Beck. As far as Drew Gilbert with the Astros, I mean, Gilbert knows what it's like to play for a team that's hated by the rest of the country. There's no team that's more hated than the Astros at this point, even though it's not totally fair to that organization, because a lot of the players that are currently with the Astros had nothing to do with the sign-stealing scandal that went down in 2017. Some of those guys, of course, still left. Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, who's taking his what he took part in with that has kind of been disputed, whether or not he cheated. But anyway, Gilbert should fit in nicely there. And then Blade Tidwell going to my New York Mets. I thought Tidwell was a first-round talent, had some shoulder issues last year. That's kind of why he fell. Healthy, the first talent, it could be kind of a middle-of-the-rotation guy. He's touched 99, sits like 94, 98 with his fastball. He's a great slider. Another college arm. Kind of like with Beck, if things go well in the minors, you could see him pretty quickly in the big leagues. The Mets, obviously I know a lot about them, watching them every day. They don't have a lot of pitching depth, starting pitching depth, so they really need a college arm like that that can maybe come up and help the team pretty quickly.
I hope we do see all of those dudes in the pros. It's just so useful in any sport at all. You think about a guy like Grant Williams. We're just for the basketball team. Rick can point to Grant and be like, look, we got a dude starting in the NBA Finals. Look at this guy. You know, well, I guess he didn't start, but he's on, you know, on the floor a lot in those games. And you can point to that. And it's just
defensive players too. I mean, there's a lot of Grant Williams talk.
Uh-huh. And so you can point to that and go, hey, here's this. So I hope at least one of those dudes kind of becomes a real guy. I could see all three, as you've been saying there. I will admit, I am a Texas Rangers fan. I think I've talked about this on this show before. I grew up, a whole side of my family lives in Fort Worth, Texas. I used to spend summers with them at their house. And one of the things that we would do during those summers is go to Rangers games. So I've been growing up going to Rangers games. I never went to Braves games or anything like that. It was always Rangers games. And admittedly, I was a little off put by Drew Gilbert getting selected by the Astros. The kid's amazing. Absolutely electric. Love the dude, but I have to hate him now, just like everybody else. I think the Astros are the mortal enemy at this point, because it really was a table. The tables got turned on the Rangers as far as the Astros went. The Astros were Vanderbilt to the Rangers for the longest time. The Rangers were kind of like the Yankees of the South. Like, they just bought everybody, A-Rod, everybody, you know. And then the Astros did their little, Moneyball. And then they're just whipping our ass every year now, and it sucks. The whole cheating thing certainly doesn't help. But as you said, could there be a better fit probably in the MLB for Drew Gilbert, a guy who is hated nationwide by college baseball fans? I don't think so. It really is perfect. I love that. And so hopefully that's not the end of Tennessee players getting taken in the draft. I think you'll see Lipscomb and some other guys too. But
I think Lipscomb rounds 3 through 10, I believe, are today, Monday, starting this afternoon. I believe Lipscomb should go today for sure. I would think maybe third round, possibly fourth. And Ben Joyce should go fourth too. Ben Joyce is really unique in the fact that he's hard to kind of project where he should go, because he hasn't, you know, he's come back from Tommy John. He only started one game last year. He's usually mostly as a reliever, not a lot of high leverage situations. Tony Vitello was very careful with where he used Ben Joyce, which is good. I mean, the way Joyce is coming back from a major injury, you don't want to put too much on him too fast, but oozing with talent potential. We all know about the 105-mile-per-hour fastballs he can throw. He can sit like 102, which is just totally insane. He's a player that possibly up a team this year, like in a pennant race, like this fall. Like he could come up and play the same year he's drafted, which has happened before. It happens every now and then. It doesn't happen a lot. I think it happened a couple of years ago it's usually a pitcher when it does happen. So that'd be kind of interesting if a team that really needs bullpen help sees voices, maybe a P could help them this year. I mean, that could have him drafted a little earlier than maybe expected.
That would be amazing. I hope that does happen. We'll just have to wait and see. Unfortunately, we record the show on Mondays, so we're not going to be able to find out when all those guys get drafted. How many rounds? There's like 50,000 rounds.
They backed it down after COVID.
Oh, they did. Okay.
So part of that's because they consolidated some minor league teams. They've eliminated a lot of minor league teams, like the Mets, for example, used to have a team in Kingsport, Tennessee. And that team it's no longer the Kingsport Mets. It's no longer a minor league affiliated team. I'm not sure what they've done with that specific team, but they tried to eliminate there being so many minor league players. It was kind of MLB kind of acting like the NCAA in a way, just doing some stuff that didn't make sense. That was their initial answer to minor leaguers being underpaid was, okay, we'll just cut out some of the jobs and you can pay the rest of the guys more. Yeah, I mean, it's a bizarre solution to a problem that's existed for a long time. But yeah, it's not nearly as many rounds as when like Mike Piazza got drafted in the 70th round or something 30 years ago. And I mean, you might have been drafted 30 years ago. It was
exactly
it was wild.
It's like they're out here like drafting like 13-year-olds from, you know, that are playing at like Cedar Bluff Middle School here in Knoxville. It's crazy how many rounds there used to be, but interesting nonetheless. We just wanted to mention that up top. Congratulations to everybody.
Oh, how about your Ranger? Your Ranger drafted Kumar Rocker last night, which is number three overall.
Glitched from the Wi-Fi. You mentioned Kumar Rocker, but what did you say about him?
I said your Rangers took him pretty high last night.
That's number true.
Three, after he was drafted by Mets last year, they had signed him because of some shoulder concerns, which apparently were not as big of an issue as the Mets thought they were.
And it was a lot of people were talking about that. I like that pickup. I mean, Rocker was a star in college, and I'm happy to let him work through the system, see what he can do. But a lot of people made it hay about it because they announced his name, and they didn't announce he was from Vanderbilt University. They announced him from Farragut, Tennessee.
Yes,
which is right here in Knoxville.
I mean, he spent one year playing high school baseball in Knoxville, I believe, right? Yep. I mean, the year that Tracy Rocker was Jerry Pruitt's first year, 2018, I believe. Other than that, he was in Georgia in high school, I believe.
I guess I don't really know his history after that.
He's from Georgia. I know that originally from Georgia. I think he played high school ball in Georgia before coming up to Knoxville.
Well, it was still hilarious. I mean, as far as I am concerned, as a Rangers fan, he is from Farragut, Tennessee. He is not a Vandy alum. He did not do anything as far as like a College World Series. I don't know what his college career was like. Frankly, I've just heard good things. You know, maybe he did something. I don't know, but it doesn't even matter. I just want to see what he does in the pros, you know? So there's that with the MLB draft. Now, we got to get to the money maker. Dude, our clips for football and especially recruiting on YouTube have been blowing up. Thanks to everybody who has been watching there. It's been awesome. The audience has seriously been growing. Last week, our full episode on YouTube, I think, was close to like 2,000 plays on YouTube. It was just like, wow, hey, everybody, anybody new, thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
Had somebody stop me while I beat. We had a Tennessee towel, and I usually don't. Yeah, I'm. You know, you meet people all the time when you're on vacation and stuff. I never ever really bring up what I do or anything like that because it's just a weird conversation to have with somebody because I don't know. I just don't. But my brother mentioned to this guy that Tennessee tab about. Tennessee, my brother mentioned to him who I was, and he knew us, knew our show, knew A to Z Sports, and a lot of other local media companies covering Tennessee sports as well. So he's a big Tennessee fan, so that was kind of nice to meet a fan on vacation.
That's incredible. That's awesome. I think the only times I get like quote unquote recognized for what we do or from when I was on with Swain and stuff was when I go to like Tennessee sporting events. Like, of course, people who are at Tennessee sporting events might know who I am. But I've been like genuinely recognized in public only one time. And it was at the Chick-fil-A near Westtown Mall, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And I ordered my food and the kid at the register was like, "Are you Charlie Burris?" And I was like, "I am. Do we have mutual," you know, expecting him to just be like, "Oh, my sister knows your sister," or something, like, you know, to be something like that. He's like, "Oh, no, I saw you on Swain's show," or something. You know, that was the one time I felt famous from doing this, where you feel like you're not just screaming into the void, you know. So shout out to that guy. I don't remember his name, but maybe he is listening to this now. I appreciate you. You made me feel cool for that one. And I was with my father-in-law, too.
Oh, that's even better when you're with somebody, yeah.
Yeah, and then he got to see that. So you let me impress my father-in-law. That was awesome. So just, you came through for...
Did you nonchalantly act like it happens all the time? I'm like, yeah, that's nothing.
I leaned back and so my father-in-law was like, "It's you know, just give me 1 second. No, this happens all the time. I'll just stop."
Yeah, another one, yeah.
Yeah, no, but bottom line, thanks to everybody who's been watching recently, and the thing that everyone has been wanting to hear about, of course, is football. We already said it is so close, you can taste it. And so let's talk about SEC Media Days. It is happening. I mean, if there is a sign that college football is near, it is SEC Media Days happening. It is always a circus. I have been a bunch of times. Have you been, Zach, to SEC Media Days?
No, I've never went.
Oh, so it is. I'll put it this way. It's like one of my favorite things to go to as a media member. And it's also a clown show. But the fact that it's a clown show is kind of what makes it one of my favorite things to go do, because they let anybody in. Like, you get guys that are getting up there and being like, you know, "Tuscaloosa First Baptist Church newsletter, Coach Saban, what do you," you know, and they're asking questions like maybe they've pared it down, like kind of like MLB. They pared it down after COVID. I don't know. But it is.
I think there was circuit. Like some Alabama fans that got in a couple of times, kind of like what you're saying, basically, like,
literally,
not a stretch at all. Yeah. And I think they have made it a little tougher, but it's still pretty easy. They send out those credential requests and they're basically begging to apply for credentials. I think it's the bigger the circus it is, the better for them. I mean, really, what can go wrong? If you have a fan that somehow gets credentials and crashes a press conference and asks Nick Saban some stupid question about Lane Kiffin or God knows, it's nothing but great, like, free coverage for the SEC, which they're all about visibility. So it's really a win-win for them. Who cares if you let some fan in that says something stupid? It's going to be a viral moment for you.
I genuinely think SEC Media Days is one of the things that has really made the SEC the premier league, because you always get these viral moments. You get the weirdo in the lobby that wears the Alabama national championship ring on his head. Yes. And you know that Barstool Sports puts that up. It gets a million clicks. And it's goofy stuff like that. Now,
speaking of goofy, how about Philip Fulmer not being he served a subpoena and had to be like on speakerphone. You know, that wasn't
exactly
that long ago, less than 20 years ago.
Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, it's been crazy since way back when, even. And now, and I just love it. It was just always really fun to go and obviously meet other media members, and that's fun because we're all just a bunch of dorks. Yeah, but it was just that really easy accessibility to players from every team, to coaches from every team, and just kind of that communal thing. Was always awesome. I know some media guys, like, that's like their like summer vacation. They get to go, and like a lot of those guys.
Oh yeah, and, you'll party. See them like, yeah, like singing karaoke, yeah, later at bars and stuff.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, it's two of my favorite, or one of my favorite things. I have two specific instances that happened more than that. Is anytime there's a coach at SEC Media Days, and it could happen this year with Brian Harsin. He would be a good candidate for this, considering all the stuff that happened at Auburn this past offseason, where he was almost fired. It's when a coach is kind of facing some questions, and they get up there and they get their opening statement. They have so much time allotted for their opening statement and for questions, and they'll get up there and filibuster for 15 or 20 minutes. We saw Hugh Freeze do it in 2017, yep, not long before he was fired. He spoke for like 16 minutes. And then we saw Jeremy Pruitt do it a few years ago with Tennessee, where he basically went through the entire roster, like player by player, and just read off the roster and would say like a little thing or two about a player. And that went on for, you know, 15 minutes or so. So it's always amusing to me how a coach can filibuster their way through SEC Media Days when they don't want to take any questions.
Yeah, just when in any situation like that, it's I love seeing other media members come at some of these coaches, because there's, if you've been in media at a particular school, you know that the media, like the media that covers Tennessee, needs access at Tennessee. And so they are friendly a lot of the time to Tennessee. You're not going to get some of these guys, the guys that not go in and ask the hard questions. They're just not. You can guess who those people are that I am referring to, and I think a lot of people probably know. Mm-hmm. But that just is the way that it is. You can question the ethics of that, but at the end of the day, it's just sports. You know, it's not that.
And honestly, not a ton of shade at those people, because by human nature, it's incredibly awkward to put yourself in situations with conflict and then have to see those people every single day. So you write something about a coach. And again, I know journalism, so that's why I'm not in any job. That's why there's not a ton of like true journalists, especially in sports, out there. There just isn't. I mean, what we do, it's content, and it's a content world, and that's most of what you see out there. To write a story and put it out there, and then you got to face that coach or that player when it's player, that can be tough. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. So not too much shade at them, but yeah, it is much different when it's the local media as opposed to a Auburn reporter that doesn't have to go see Josh Heupel three times a week.
Exactly. So that you can have, like, I'm sure Heupel will probably have like an LSU reporter that asks him a question at Media Days, or an Alabama reporter, something like that. And it's always interesting just because they can kind of come for you. They can set out to get the answer that they want, or the viral moment that they want, or the quote that they want. And I just that rogue factor is always interesting. I already know what
Heupel's going to get. He's going to get that. And I know it's going to be. It's going to be about NIL. In Tennessee,
oh, yeah,
and investigation. Like that's not something that we've really heard the local media talk to him about, which he hasn't had a lot of media opportunity since Nico committed or anything like that. So he hasn't really had those questions from the local, or had the opportunity to face those questions from the local media just yet. But the questions are going to come from a reporter of another program.
Yeah. And this is what I wanted to get into. We went way around the bend talking about the goofiness of Media Days in general, but just what to kind of expect with Heupel. Cause to me, I want it to be as low key as possible. I mean, that is the goal. I think that's the media team at Tennessee's goal here. You don't want any of those viral moments. You don't want him to get gotcha. You don't want anything like that, especially with the NIL and the NCAA investigation. Like, you have some stuff floating out there that he could get asked about that could produce some not so great moments. And so he's going to get asked the sort of boilerplate stuff about his players and things like that. But like, he has a starting quarterback. So like, you don't have anything like that. You pretty much have a starting running back, you know, your star receiver. Defense, there's plenty of questions, I think, but people aren't, that's not as sensational as like a quarterback battle. I mean, that was the first question. Brian Kelly's already spoken. That was like the first question he got asked, was like, what's the deal with your quarterback situation? And he evaded the question and just said, it's he said, we don't How did he put it? We don't have a quarterback battle. We have a quarterback advantage or something. Just shut up. That's so annoying.
But, and you wonder where Butch Jones got some of his corniness from. It came straight from that guy. 100%.
Yeah. The apple did not fall far from the tree for Brian Kelly to Butch Jones. But I do think with the NIL stuff, Heupel just needs to keep that line that he has for so long. Like, he's gotten these questions already this offseason, and he's stayed upbeat about NIL. And he hasn't been one of the complainers. He hasn't been a Nick Saban. And he just goes, we're going to use it to the best of our ability. That's the way that it is. And there we go. Keep that line. Keep it simple. Don't go off the map. And I think it'll be fine. Heupel, if we learn anything about him, he is actually good in these media situations. He's good at kind of towing that line of being, you know, Pruitt was boring and dumb. Butch was a super try hard and ridiculous and said stupid stuff. You want to just be in the middle. Just keep it close to the vest, but give the sound bite. But don't actually say anything, but don't be boring, you know? And Heupel genuinely is pretty good at that, just generally speaking.
Hold on 1 second.
Did you freeze up?
Yeah.
There we go. Got you back.
All right. There we go. I don't know. The internet's been a little bit spotty this morning for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe it's that midsummer vacation it's on as well. But yeah. He's been dealing with the media since, I don't know, 2000, whenever he was at Oklahoma. I mean, he's been in the spotlight. This is nothing new for him. He knows how to answer questions without saying a lot. He's not going to have some strong take on anything. He's just really good at saying a whole bunch of nothing. I mean, I think he's across genuine. He's very easy to like. He's laid back. He's real. He's not real cliche, but he does answer questions without saying a whole lot of stuff. So, it's a good setting for him. Like you said, he's kind of stayed away from saying anything too controversial about the NIL stuff, which is the way he should be. You know, you want to get too much. Had some coaches kind of endorsing collectives recently, which is collectives are against the NCAA rules, whether you like that or not. It is, and it could lead to some issues. Of course, we're all about saying screw the NCAA and do what you want, but there are consequences, and it can make your life a little bit harder. So he's staying away from that. I think it'll be kind of the status quo. You won't really find out too much. You won't reveal too much. And that's, like you said, that's the way Tennessee's athletics department, communications department wants it.
I think they got to be feeling pretty good going into this, though, because you don't have, like last year, you kind of had who's going to be the quarterback. We're not sure. Some of the stuff like that. Like, you just don't have a ton going on outside of that NIL question. Obviously, since he's not signed yet, he cannot even say the name Nico Iamaleava. That would be an NCAA violation. Like, there's, and the media members know that. They know what they're probably going to get if they ask a question like that. They might still ask it regardless. But I'll be interested to see where in any of it goes. I was trying to think what else it might be, because it has just generally been a pretty, like, anodyne offseason. There just hasn't been, the recruiting has been good, and that's been really nice. There's been a lot of optimism and things like that, but there hasn't been, like, you remember, was it with Butch, there was a party where 10 players got arrested or cited, stuff like that hasn't happened. You know, knock on wood, the season is not here yet. We got to get there. But there just hasn't been that type of stuff. Like you kind of said with Harsin, there has to be, come on, folks. Somebody ask the good questions to Brian Harsin. like this dude deserves it. His whole deal has been a complete mess. You know, a supposedly true, but maybe not true about him having an affair with a staffer and all this stuff. Like, there's so much. It's a gold mine with Harsin. And I think Tennessee's got to be happy that there just isn't really that hanging out there right now, because that's a nightmare to try to keep, and especially in an offseason where you're really trying to build like Heupel is. I mean, they're just in such a position where they have to have all the PR go correctly. You got to have that program looking pristine And right now, I don't think, unless there's some unforeseen circumstance, I don't think they're going to have too tough of a time doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a relatively quiet offseason for Tennessee. They've picked up some nice recruits. They've missed on a couple, but they've got a top 10 class right now, so everything's kind of trending the right direction. I think the biggest questions outside of the NIL stuff, which is inevitable, you'll probably see like one big question about kind of stuff. Probably some really mundane questions about the defense, about the offensive identity, and how does Tennessee evolve? How do they keep giving teams different looks? Because what Tennessee ran last year, you know, it was based on tempo. It worked. They got the looks that they wanted. Do teams get better at identifying what Tennessee's doing? Do they get better at practicing for Tennessee's tempo? Heupel has been an innovative guy his entire career. So what's next for Tennessee's offense from here? Because it has to keep evolving. You can't, as well as it worked last year, and maybe it continues to work at that same level this year, you still got to put in, because inevitably in the fourth quarter of game, Florida is going to recognize a look that Tennessee gives based off something that they did last year. And maybe that's the difference in the game. Tennessee's got to have, they got to have plays drawn up for those moments. So I think I've seen some questions for Heupel kind of national level stuff he's done. I think you'll see that be one of the big storylines that comes out of his appearance this week.
One of the things that I would love to ask him, and he has kind of been asked about this, and I think I know what his answer probably would be, but you just ask some of those late game situations or late half situations, late in the first half, when he's pressed by the clock, and he just kind of does these odd things as far as clock management goes, game management, where they're extremely aggressive and not really, seems like he's not really taking into consideration the amount of time left on the clock and some stuff like that. I would love to ask him about that. I haven't been in the media corps since he's been around. I guess I went to his first spring game. That was the only thing that I've done with A to Z. But outside of that, it's just been something that I've wanted to hear asked. And he basically goes, when he's been sort of asked about that in the past, he goes like, it's the system. That's what we do. And that's the way that it is. And it just is kind of like that, where he's pretty matter of fact about it. And fair enough. But I've just felt like that was something that genuinely hurt his team last year. I think it was a mistake in some situations. I think it was a complete mistake. And I said it on the show. I think he, you know, you can believe in the fact that he believes his system is great. That's awesome. I think it bit him in the butt on multiple occasions last year. And so we can have a difference of opinion there, but I'd like to see him ask that. I don't know if anyone will. I doubt it, but that's one that I would have liked to seen. But outside of that, I mean, yeah, what would it even be outside of the defense, which, and that stuff, kind of how you were saying, like, that stuff's just only going to be interesting to Tennessee fans. It's not going to be an SEC wide, like, did you hear what Heupel said about his middle linebacker? That's not, you know, that's not going to be interesting. But nonetheless, anything else I want to get into? So Greg Sankey's been speaking live, but anything, and we'll talk about what he said so far. But anything else, Zach, that you wanted to cover with Heupel at SEC Media Days before we move on? Or the players. We didn't really talk about the players. It's going to be what Hendon Hooker, Cedric Tillman, Trayvon Flowers. I don't expect much to happen with them. They're just going to get the questions that players typically do. Tough questions a lot of the time. But anything else that you wanted to cover with Tennessee at Media Days?
The players that were chosen, if you think back a year ago at this time, you probably, Trayvon Flowers would have been a decent guess because he's been around a while. He's been a good player for Tennessee. You'd have never guessed Hendon Hooker, who was not really even on the radar, even at this time last year. All the talk was Joe Milton's arm and Harrison Bailey's potential. Hendon Hooker was kind of an afterthought. And then Cedric Tillman as well. I mean, he had, what, eight receptions in his first few years here at Tennessee before exploding last season and becoming the top returning receiver in the SEC, which is an insane stat that I don't feel like has really been mentioned. that much. You keep seeing these top five, top 10 wide receiver lists, and Cedric Tillman's not on it. And the guy's the leading returning receiver in the SEC, the best conference in college football. It's insane the lack of attention that he's received over the past couple of months and since the end of the season. But really just shows how unpredictable college football is. So you just truly never know sometimes. I mean, sometimes you know that Trevor Lawrence is going to be an incredible player, and then all of a sudden Joe Burrow out of nowhere wins the Heisman. Maybe Hendon Hooker on a national level is that same type of player this year where, yeah, Tennessee fans know who he is, SEC fans know who he is, but maybe he's starting the whole year now, full year in Josh Heupel's offense. Maybe you really see him explode this year and become a real legit threat to win the Heisman. I mean, a lot of things have to go right, obviously, for that to happen, but as long as he's in that conversation, and if he somehow just gets to New York and gets to that ceremony, that would be so huge for Tennessee. So he doesn't even have to win. Just show up to that ceremony and be invited, and that's massive for Tennessee.
Yeah, that just to get back in a truly elite conversation where, you know, with Butch, you got into the top 10 after you beat Florida and Georgia, and you went to Texas A&M, and it was a top 10 matchup and that stuff. And that's great, but people were still like, eh, how good is Tennessee really? If you got a dude, even I think for him to get to New York, Tennessee probably has to have some sort of like beat Alabama and like Hooker is the linchpin of beating Alabama, like some sort of beat Georgia, like some kind of big moment like that, which to me seems really far-fetched. Maybe not. If it's not that, I think it has to be a 10-2 season. You win in Death Valley, you beat Florida, you come in second in the SEC East, where your only loss in the East is to Georgia. Like, it has to be that for him to get there. It's got to be sensational because the Heisman does not go to the best player in college football. It goes to the best player on the best team, the most notable team. I mean, when was the last time that the Heisman went to a player on a bad team? It never does. It just, that never happens. I mean, you even had where like Christian McCaffrey was by like miles the best player. And I forget who won it the year he won it, but it was like so clear he was the best player in college football and he didn't win. You know, it just is like, it's stuff like that. So there has to be some sensational moment, and man, that gives me chills to kind of think about what it might be. But yeah, you can't understate how huge that would be, because I think it would be especially huge because I think it has to come with a 10-2 season. It has to come with a miracle win over Alabama. It has to come with something like that. So you would have a huge season and a huge quarterback moment like that. And that's where you start talking about like, okay, Tennessee might really be on the comeback. Like we really might be about on the precipice of being one of those teams again, that's in that upper echelon of college football. And yeah, who knows? Hooker might be that guy. Yael Maliava might be that guy. Taven Jackson might be that guy. I don't know. Nobody's really talking about him, but he's still in that quarterback.
I mean, yeah, that could be the same situation as like Hooker a year ago, where Taven Jackson, mm-hmm. and I've written about Taven Jackson, about how he's kind of the forgotten guy, where Hooker's going to be gone after this year, and then Nico's coming in. I still think Taven Jackson is the favorite to be the starter in 2023 yeah. when the season. I mean, and look, he could easily be an all SEC type guy that ends up being a star. I mean, he's a 4-star, not that far from being a 5-star quarterback. So, and he's very athletic. I think people they're not writing him off. They're just forgetting about him. And that's understandable with Hooker and Nico there.
Yeah. He is really just been a background guy. Hopefully he's been, maybe that puts a little chip on his shoulder. He's been working. I hope. I mean, he'll have a pretty good amount of experience behind him by the time that he is kind of up for that job. I guess technically speaking, he could be up for that job this year, if God forbid Hooker goes down with injury or something like that. But
yeah, you hope that's not the case. That's not the way that you want to see him starting.
Don't speak that into existence. But yeah, Lord knows we've seen it before with guys. That is how Dobbs got to start. That was an injury to
twice.
Justin Worley.
He started in 2013, and they went back to Worley in 2014 until he got hurt. In retrospect, they should have just started him in 2014.
That is true. I forgot that happened. They did. He played and he came in and was like pretty good. And then they went back to Worley. I forgot that happened. Weird times.
That was Butch Jones. The whole thing was weird.
Yeah, that's a total Butch move.
Speaking of which, just a quick aside, I really feel like Riley Ferguson might have been the best, the most talented quarterback on that team, but he just did not. He was worse upstairs than Tyler Bray, and he just wasn't able to get on the right page. But I always thought, just from watching him, that he might have been the most talented, naturally talented player on that team.
He had a really nice time at Memphis after he left, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, he...
Right, and then he never really took off in the NFL. He got picked up by a team randomly. He might have been drafted late, but it just never panned out.
Yeah, well, who knows? Well, we'll have that. That's the bottom line. And we'll cover what, you know, our season predictions and things like that in the coming weeks. But let's talk before we get and we finish with our top five players for Tennessee, most important players for Tennessee in the coming season. We'll just talk briefly. Greg Sankey just had a couple of quotes here. He said, the SEC will not be complacent, even with the knowledge we're in a position of strength. And then when he was asked if the SEC will expand, he said, we're attentive, we're engaged in conversation, we'll watch what happens around us and be thoughtful, but nimble, which is him saying, yes, we are going to expand. And he did say, quote, we are a super league. I would assume that was maybe in response to some question about the SEC potentially becoming a quote unquote super league. The SEC is not a super league yet. I mean, 14 teams. I think the ACC is a little bit closer to that at this point with 18, I think that they have at the moment. But Sankey, he's gunning. He wants the NCAA out of college football. He wants a huge league. He wants to be the most powerful league in college football. He wants the SEC to be like a division in the NFL, essentially. I think that's his long-term vision. I actually, for anybody that wants to hear a good conversation about that, Barrett Salee last week from CBS Sports, me and him talked about that on last week's show, and he had some great thoughts about it. But just some interesting notes from Greg Sankey and what he had to say. Not sure if you saw anything else like that. I'm just seeing the Twitter scroll there, but if you had any thoughts on what he had to say and his, since he's speaking literally as we're speaking here.
Yeah, it really just seems like he's trying to be proactive in his stance with the SEC. It's what he's always done. I mean, he kind of, I don't know if it's necessarily where everybody wants the sport to go, but I think Sankey knows that's where it's heading, so you might as well as beat everybody else there. I mean, that kind of seems like the approach. And it's all about TV money, obviously. I don't know. You just have to accept it. It is what it is. It's where it's going, and you can fight against it if you're key, but then you just get left behind. And the reason the SEC hasn't been left behind is because they've been proactive and they've tried to take the lead on stuff like this. I mean, you don't go out and get Texas and Oklahoma unless you kind of know that's where this is heading. So I'm sure they've already identified their next victims that they will absorb into the SEC because it kind of is against your will. I think it was actually Barrett Salee that tweeted a couple of weeks ago whenever that news broke that the SEC was in negotiations with some ACC programs. And Barrett said, I mean, and correctly, the SEC doesn't negotiate. They extend invitations. They tell you when you can come join. There is no let's talk about it. It's you're in or you're out. And if you get asked by the SEC to join, you don't say no. If Texas and Oklahoma don't say no, then nobody out there is saying no. I don't care who it is.
There is no school that, if approached by the SEC, would say no. We don't want $100 million in extra revenue. What are you stupid? Yeah. Of course, any school is going to want to join that. I mean, the TV deal is unreal with ESPN, CBS, that's coming up now, but where all of that's going to change, the SEC on CBS. But, Sankey, as many problems as I have with him, I think he's been really complacent and annoying with like SEC officiating and some things like that. I don't think that he advocates for the SEC in the best way that he can in some situations. But the dude's a visionary, and he knows what he wants out of this league, and he's willing to go get it. And I at least respect that much. I do see, we've talked about this before. I'm just following. This is the live updates from CBS Sports. I believe Barrett Salee actually himself is curating this feed. Missouri football posted. So Drinkwitz is there today, Mizzou's football coach. They said official Coach Drinkwitz shoe report. And he has shoes with tiger stripes on them. And they're like, I'm not a shoe guy, but like Nike high tops. And he just, I'm sure he's wearing it like with a suit. And it's just stop. Like Drinkwitz is a dork, isn't he? Like he's just a dork. Stop. We don't need all of this. Look at my shoes. It feels like when Mullen used to do this. Dan Mullen yes. used to do that. Like, he used to wear funny shoes and shirts and all that stuff. You don't have to do that. Like, Mullen was at least a good football coach. It doesn't seem like Drinkwitz is going to do a whole lot of Missouri, potentially. But just, you're a dork. You don't have to do all this try-hard stuff. Just embrace it. Just be. That's one of the main things that I like about Heupel is he doesn't do any of that. He doesn't... He knows who he is. He's a football guy, and it's similar with Brian Kelly too. Just where he's like putting on a southern accent and all this stuff. Just don't. Nope. You don't have to do that. Please don't do that. It's okay. But that just I'm a just, funny note there.
Looking at these shoes, it's awful. These are really, really, really bad. They look like a. They look like a combination of a couch that you would see in being sold at a flea market. And I don't know. It's just bad. There's a lot going on there. Go look at them. Go just Twitter search Eli Drinkwitz and they pop right up. I'm with you. It's definitely trying too hard. Some coaches can do this and it's genuine. It doesn't come across like they're trying too hard. Roy Williams, he used to be the UNC basketball coach. Of him all the time with his shoes for the game, and that's kind of made it a fun thing. Like he leaned into it, like I'm too old to be wearing these, but I'm going to anyway, and I'm gonna have fun with it. Like it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek type deal. Drinkwitz and Mullen, it definitely feels like they're trying too hard. I like Heupel just wear like the low top Jordans, the orange and white, and they were it looked like he wore the same pair for 3 months straight. They were creased. And then the toe, which real sneakerheads, you know, obviously can't stand that. They'd rather you just like take your shoes off while you're driving type deal. Hard for him. Nick Saban, he wears loafers everywhere the guy goes. Like the exactly. only time you see him in tennis shoes is on the practice field while he's actively coaching football. If Nick Saban's the best recruiter in football, I don't think it's necessary.
Have you ever seen Nick Saban talk about the shoes that he's wearing? No, you have not. And that's about all you need to say as far as that goes. It's just like the greatest coach in the game doesn't do it.
You know what?
This.
I actually read a article recently. Unfortunately, I can't remember where it came from. I was on vacation and I was reading it, and it was about Nick Saban and the program that he runs. In fact, I think it was actually about it was a interview with some of the coaches that had coached under him. I think Jeremy Pruitt was part of the interview actually. But one of the assistants that used to coach under him talked about how Nick Saban wears the exact same thing to practice every single day. It's the exact same. It's like a little vest type deal, the hat that you see him wearing, a pair of shorts. Yeah. It's the exact same thing. And apparently, like, he is so detail-oriented that they would have their team meetings, position group meetings before practice, and he would be in, like, business wear type stuff. Slacks and the loafers and for the meetings, he would change before going out to the practice field, and he had that very same thing every single day, so he would not waste time changing, because he said, I do not have time to be worried about what I'm going to wear. I need 5 minutes to change. I don't need 10 minutes to decide what I'm going to wear. And it's like down to the moment where he's allocating 5 extra minutes for himself based on not having to pick out his clothes for practice. Like that's how much he cares about what he wears.
I'm a really regimented person. I eat the same thing for breakfast and the same thing for lunch every single day. And I'm kind of like that. I have a revolving set of clothes that I wear, you might notice I wear like the same hat on here always and just like a t-shirt and stuff. Like Saban is the bane of my existence as far as being a sports fan. And I hate the guy, but damn it, I respect that whole, I gotta say, I mean, he's like a cartoon character. Like you would open his closet and it would just be the same thing.
Doug Funny, you remember?
Yeah,
the show Doug. That was his closet. Yeah, that's what I always think of.
Yes, just the same clothes all lined up.
You know what's funny about Saban is it works, but it cannot be easily replicated. Like even Kirby Smart kind of does things his own way. And that's why he's been successful, is because he's taken the Saban way, but he's kind of trying to make it his own or do his own thing. Jeremy Pruitt, Jim McElwain, Will Muschamp, they all fail because they try to do it exactly like Saban. And you're not Saban. You don't have that presence. You're not that guy. It's not going to work. It just won't.
You got to have your own deal as a coach. I think that's absolutely true. Because, yeah, it's like Pruitt showed up. He just wanted to be Saban. That was it. And he was trying to force that on. And it was like, you have won Zippo. You've done nothing. You have no respect. You are not that guy. And you're not going to come in here and be a tyrant, because who gave you that, you know, just because you get paid $4 million, your name is on the door, you're just going to be a psycho? That's not how this works. Like, Saban can do that because he's won 10 national championships or whatever it is at this point, like 6 or 7 or 8 or too many. It depresses me to talk about. he can do that. You cannot do that. And it's kind of like, I almost feel that way with Drinkwitz. He's so bad where you're almost like, you stink. You can't have fun. There's no fun. Like Kiffin can have fun. He had a 10-win season last year. He can have a little bit of fun. You stink. You can't do anything. That's not allowed. What are you doing? How about you get into the friggin' film room and you get a better football team? Like that's I don't know. Just some of that stuff. It's I like talking about it, but I'm definitely a stickler. Probably I care about it more than I probably should. It just annoys me. Just don't be a dork. We all know who you really are. So there's that. We could talk for days about SEC Media Days. It's so fun, but we'll move on to the final segment of the show. Top 5 most important players for Tennessee in 2022, kind of kicking off our season preview coverage for the 2022 campaign. We collaborated on this. We thought about doing where we each had a list of 5, but we thought that might get a little messy. So we made it a collective list of 5 between ourselves, and we'll just count it down. And then I think at the end, we can kind of say like our honorable mention, sort of a number 6 position. We also had some thoughts on to some guys that got left out, but maybe should be considered extremely important for Tennessee. But Zach, go ahead and start us off here at number 5 for Tennessee's most important players in 2022. Who's number 5?
Yeah, I really feel like part of this list you could have put in any order. But the last name I wrote down, so I started from 1 to 5, so my feeling was that number 5 is Trayvon Flowers. I feel like he's a very important player to Tennessee's defense. He's got to be the captain of secondary back there with Alante Taylor and Theo Jackson gone. He's the senior guy. He's the experienced guy. That whole unit needs a lot of help. I mean, that's probably the weakest part of Tennessee's defense, especially at cornerback. But Trayvon Flowers can kind of be the guy, the glue that holds that position group together, and he's got to be that guy. He's got to stay healthy, and if so, I think that group can be at least average, and that's really all you're looking for out of them this year. They don't have the depth, they don't have the talent that some of the other secondary groups in the SEC has, but Flowers and his veteran leadership I think can make a real difference.
Yeah, I hope that him speaking at Media Days is kind of a sign that he's stepping up and really being that guy and a leader in the room. I think he has that potential. You lose a lot of fire with Alante Taylor, man. He obviously brought a lot of talent. They got him drafted into the NFL, but he also, I mean, he was a leader. He was very vocal. He had a lot of fire, maybe a little too much sometimes. And you kind of have to replace that. And maybe he can be a little more level-headed version of Alante Taylor almost, potentially in that defensive back position. I think the defense this year is just, I think, the linchpin of everything, right? And so stopping the pass and covering, I mean, especially after last year, covering the middle of the field, some things like this, obviously that goes to linebackers and has some other factors to it too. But I think it's incredibly important because you think when it is as back and forth as Tennessee games are going to be with Heupel, one batted pass can be the game. This one batted pass was the game against Kentucky this past year. Like, think about that. And so it can be that tenuous, that close. And so, yeah, he's incredibly important. Who's number four for you?
I think it's got to be one of Tennessee's pass rushers. And I think it can be either one of these guys. I lean towards Byron Young being a guy, but Tyler Barron right there. You need those guys to work together. Byron Young, I believe he led the team in tackles for loss last year. Him and Tyler Barron and I believe Jeremy Banks all kind of had around five and a half sacks. You really want to see one of those guys get close to about 10 sacks this year, and you need the other one to be right at around six or seven. I mean, that's – if quarterback is the most important position on the field, and I think getting after the quarterback has to be right there next to that. I think you see in the NFL your highest-paid players, your quarterback, your edge rushers, and your cornerbacks. And I think that's just as true in college football. Like, those same guys are just as important. If you can get the quarterback, if you can make him uncomfortable – get them in some third and long situations. I mean, your chances of winning the game go way up. Tyler Barron coming back this year when he could have he was in the transfer portal very briefly. I'm sure some NIL deal kind of helped bring him back to Tennessee. Getting him back was very important, but if that combination really need them to step up and just take another step forward. They played well last year, but they just got to take it up a notch this year.
Yes, absolutely, because – like you said, if you can have a 10 sack guy where Young was at 5.5, Banks at 5.5, Matthew Butler at 5, Tyler Barron at 4. Yeah, I mean, if you can double that production for both of those guys, 10 for Young, 8 for Barron, something like that, that's a dangerous pass rush. And that means that they're getting back there into that backfield a lot and that they grew a lot over the offseason. It is just another piece of that defense where any disruption, any, you know, a hold on third down, like, and not letting the team respond after a big score that Tennessee will inevitably have in all of these games, you know, that quick strike offense, you know, getting a stop is like, getting a stop is going to be gold for this team in this coming year, especially with so many of these toss-up games.
You're gonna need turnovers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's gonna be huge. Like, think about the importance of the difference that, like, Derek Barnett made. Like the 2016 Georgia game, the strip sack in the end zone got Tennessee the lead in that game. They do not win without it. It was huge. And just even if you get the quarterback of any given team hearing footsteps, and then they make mistakes. Like, so much of that is so important. And of course, Flowers and the defensive backs work in sort of in tandem with the pass rush. You can kind of have a coverage sack where the coverage is so good that the quarterback doesn't get a pass off, and then he gets sacked. You know, they can kind of work in tandem. It's all just going to be so key with this team. But where did we go for number three? I think people might be sensing a theme here. But number three, Zach, for our top five player.
Yeah, I had Jeremy Banks there. I think he's the leader of the defense. I think you need him to be at a level. You need him to really be the guy, kind of like Trayvon Flowers is in the secondary. You need Jeremy Banks there to be that guy for the entire defense. Tennessee's going to face some more. The longer that Josh Heupel's at Tennessee, the longer this style of offense is successful, the more you're going to get their team kind of copying that. And they're going to incorporate tempo into their offense in their own unique way. That means opposing offenses are going to be moving faster. Jeremy Banks has the and the whole defense has the benefit of practicing against Tennessee's offense every day, so they're kind of more prepared to handle this than maybe some other defenses. But there's some quick calls you got to make. Jeremy Banks, you have to make sure everybody's lined up in the right spot. That's his responsibility. I mean, he is the guy out there. He's the extra coach, extra defensive coach, basically. He's got to play more controlled this year. He's got to cut down on the dumb penalties. You can't have a personal foul penalty killing you in the third quarter if you've made a third down stop, and then you give the other team fresh life. I mean, there's nothing more maddening for a fan, a coach, or probably even a teammate than to see something like that happen. I love Jeremy Banks and the way he plays. I mean, he plays with aggression. He's physical, high energy. He's passionate. He wants to win. He's out there for all the right reasons. He just has to harness that. And I know that's been a big point of emphasis for Tim Banks and that defense and the position coaches, but this is Banks. It feels like he's been at Tennessee forever. This is his last hurrah. So he really, if he wants a shot in the NFL, he's got to prove that he can play controlled out there and be a guy of the defense.
He had 128 tackles last year. That dude was all over the field. I think that you move on numbers in the coming season. He's going to be a linchpin, and that's why we put him there. I think he's the most important piece on that defense, and just anybody at that mic spot, because it just is. Am I thinking of that? Forgive me. Not a huge like. Is it? What's the middle linebacker? Is Mike right or Will? What's who?
Yeah, it's Mike. But at the same time, you get so many nickel packages in college football these days, where you got five DBs on the field with two linebackers. It doesn't even matter. It's kind of weird. I mean, you're gonna have Byron Young kind of lined up as a linebacker, but pass rushing linebacker, and then maybe Juwan Mitchell on the other side of Banks.
Yeah, he's a as you said there, I mean, he's going to be the guy kind of coordinating on the field just at that spot a lot of the time. And that's the whole deal. Can he stay within himself, stay cool, because he is such a hothead and has been? Like, I want to see him grow. And because if you can harness the talent that he has and cut out those stupid plays, it is right there for that guy. I do wonder, you think Juwan Mitchell is going to be a factor this season? Because he was injured last year, and people really thought he was going to contribute, gets injured and doesn't end up playing barely at all. So he's not going to talk about it at all.
No, people assumed he was going to hit the transfer portal, but he didn't.
Yeah, me too.
You know, he was the leading tackler at Texas the year before he came to Tennessee, back in 2020, the COVID-shortened year. You said he kind of got injured. I know Buck Rising, A to Z Sports, the host of show on 104.5 Zone, the Buck Rising show. He had Tim Banks on earlier this offseason and specifically asked him about Juwan Mitchell. And, you know, Banks kind of said, you know, he's getting healthy and we need him to be a big part of the defense this year. Like, we need him to contribute and to be somebody we can lean on. So he's got talent, obviously. Played well at Texas. If he's healthy, I think he will be one of Tennessee's main defensive players, one of their linebackers they count on.
I hope so. And then just any of those dudes that are still there, Beasley, you know, you want to see contributions and growth from any of those guys, because we've already been saying it. What will take this team over the top is just making the defense like marginally better. Like you were that close where two stops in a given game, two stops against Ole Miss, you win that game. And, you know, it ultimately won you the game against Kentucky. And some of those toss up games, it can be the entire difference. I think you're going to have a tougher time against South Carolina at South Carolina, like a toss up game like that at LSU. Could have stopped, make the difference. And because you know you're going to score points, you know, you're going to expect 35, 45 points a game. And then can you hold the other team to 30? and win 8, 9, 10 games. Obviously, we'll see exactly how it goes. I wonder how Tim Banks is really feeling. I would love to know his genuine feeling going into this season. Like, where he really, because you lost some key pieces, Alante, you know, like how are they really anticipating the season going with this defense? Because I'm genuinely not sure. Like, because there are those rogue pieces. If Juwan Mitchell plays a lot, how's he going to play? We haven't seen him. I think he was the leading tackler at Texas. What if he ends up being a giant contributor and it like turns that defense on its ear and they suddenly become decently competent? And you know, that's the whole difference maker. Like, it could be that simple, honestly, this year. So
I think part of it is just
nervous,
finding,
but excited.
Finding good leadership on that defense. Tennessee lost some good leaders last year with Alante Taylor, Theo Jackson, Matthew Butler, one of the best leaders Tennessee's had in a long, kind of a quiet type guy, but when he talked, players listen. Replacing that leadership, that void in leadership, I think will be the biggest thing. That's why you need Jeremy Banks, Trayvon Flowers, Byron Young, Tyler Barron, some of these guys to step up in a big way.
Yeah, got to step up. So now finally for the last two, I think people might know where this might be heading, although number two was a surprise to even me. When you said this to me, the number two most important player for Tennessee this year was what?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it could be one of two players. Right now, I think that's Gerald Mendy. I mean, he's an offensive lineman transfer from Florida. You lost Cade Mays to the draft. You're kind of replacing him, basically, in a way. The plan appears to be to slide Darnell Wright from left tackle to right tackle. Darnell Wright, another potential first-round pick, possibly, in that draft. He practiced most of spring at right tackle, so it looks like he's going to slide to the right side. So then you need a new left tackle, right? I mean, the most important offensive lineman in football, the left tackle. So it looks like Gerald Mincy might be that guy. It could be Jeremiah Crawford, who was at Tennessee last year, played in 10 games, didn't see games. One of those guys, probably. They split time in spring. Mincy, I believe, was beat up a little bit at the beginning of spring, kind of got more reps at the end of spring. Whichever one of those guys wins that job is going to be hugely important because you don't have a ton of depth there. Luckily, you've got those guys maybe who can either platoon there or one steps in if one's banged up. But that's going to be a really important position. I mean, you got to have you got to win in the trenches in the SEC. And Tennessee's, they protected Hendon Hooker pretty well last year, but said you lose an NFL talent in Cade Mays, and depth is important in there. I mean, that's kind of what held Tennessee back on both sides of the ball last year at times, was a lack of depth. So if Mincy and Crawford can both be SEC starting caliber players, that's huge for Tennessee.
Yeah, that was one of the most interesting transfers recently, was Mincy. It just kind of got ignored. I don't remember much talk about it at all, and it's at such a key position, like you're saying, where you're losing. I mean, Cade Mays, just what a giant piece off of that line, and some losses like that, and he's stepping in as a guy. And looking, he played in 10 games as a redshirt freshman at Florida, and so he has SEC experience, and he can step in. You said it is kind of a toss up Crawford potentially at that spot, but I got caught off guard by that choice, and I think it is the right choice at that number two spot because it is going to be incredibly important because of the number one choice, which, of course, I think everybody knows who it's going to be. It is the place kicker on the team.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, who even is it going to be this year?
I'm honestly, I was to war a long snapper, but we can go place kicker. That's fine.
let's see. I have the depth chart up here. It'll still be Chase McGrath. That's right. Yeah. He was a transfer. And then the long snapper, Matthew Solansky. Yeah, they deserve a shout out. Hey, they're important. Genuinely,
look, the long snapper touches the ball more than almost anybody except the quarterback, the running back, or the center. So I mean, he's going to be touching the ball as much as anybody in the game. So it is a pretty important position, but not the most important.
Yeah, it is not the number one. Of course, the number one is Hendon Hooker. I think anybody with an honest assessment of this team looks, and he's the guy. This team goes as Hendon Hooker goes. Yes, the defense will be huge, and one of the biggest factors in this formula. But let's say hypotheticals like this. Hooker connects on 10% more passes this coming year, and you score any number of times. I mean, you look even at just the Purdue game last year, where just a couple of throws were just a little too strong. If he connects on those, Tennessee wins that football game. And what does that translate to this year? If he improves his touch, improves his vision, improves his you know, being more cerebral and thinking through the game, or being more familiar with the system, what kind of steps does he take? And he just, it's going to be the whole thing. Of course, he was the whole thing last year. It made all the difference in the world going to him. And so it just, what can you say? His deal is the whole deal for Tennessee this year. Not to put too much pressure on the kid, but it's going to be massive. I mean, he is arguably, I think what you would say Young is probably the best returning quarterback in the SEC, but he's right there in that conversation. Hooker is, right? It's yeah. Massive.
I mean, you've seen a lot of talk about Will Levis, the Arkansas quarterback. They like to put them up there. But yeah, I think Hendon Hooker is right there. I mean, he hit 31 touchdowns and only 3 interceptions. That to me is the most impressive stat of the year for Hooker. Just as much as Tennessee was throwing the ball, and a lot of balls down, these weren't all just short passes, little out routes, screen passes. He was throwing the ball down the field a lot, taking a lot of chances, only threw 3 interceptions. I mean, that's incredibly impressive to me. I think that's really the mark of a good quarterback. It's the one thing you see in guys like Joe Burrow and Bryce Young. They just don't turn the ball over very much. But the Hendon Hooker effect, I mean, really, if he starts against Pittsburgh, if he doesn't get hurt against Ole Miss, I mean, Tennessee wins 9 games last year. If the right call against Purdue's made with Jalen Wright and that goal line call, Tennessee's a 10-win team last year, and who would have thought that? I mean, those are hypothetical. But on the side, if Hendon Hooker doesn't play against Kentucky, you know, that's a 6-win team, and maybe they lose one of those other games that they blew out South Carolina or Missouri. You know, maybe they lose one of those games if Hendon Hooker's not playing. I mean, we saw in that Bowling Green game where that Joe Milton started this opener last year, a Hendon Hooker-led team wins that game by 50 points. And Tennessee won convincingly, but it felt like the offense never really found its rhythm. And that's what Tennessee was facing for the whole year. We saw it in the beginning against Pittsburgh and until Hooker came in the game. So who's to say this team's going to end up 5-7 last year without Hendon Hooker under center? I mean, he's that important to this offense.
Absolutely. So I think everybody kind of knew that was going to be number one, and most people that would be their number one. But just to have a guy who's been in the system for a full year, then had an entire offseason with quarterback whisper, Josh Heupel is, and just more familiarity with the system, more familiarity with the guys that he's going to be throwing, handing all off to, just more synergy in general. Just what more can you say? It's just going to be the biggest factor on this team. Can you go from averaging 38 points to averaging 45? Like, that's wins. That's wins in the win column, is just that 7 extra points in a game. And so that's pretty much the long and the short of it. We can hawk on the defense all we want. This team is built completely around offense.
And I'm sure if somebody that hears our rankings here or our list, they're going to be screaming about the wide receiver position. And if this was a top 6 or 7, I probably have Cedric Tillman at number 6. Like, he's very important to this offense, but I don't want to say this and like insult Cedric Tillman in any way, because I don't think this is like 100% the case, But Josh Heupel's offense is one where you don't have to, and we've talked about this before whenever Carnell Tate committed to Ohio State, you don't have to have a five-star wide receiver to make this work. We saw Hillman, Ellis Jones, and Javonte Payton last year, some three-star guys who stepped up and played at an elite level pretty much. You can get by with moderate talent. I don't think Cedric Tillman is – I think he's got a future in the NFL, but I don't think he's going to go out there and be Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson in his first year or two in the NFL. I don't think he's that kind of talent. You don't want to lose Tillman, but if you do lose Tillman, if that happens, if something catastrophic injury happens in training camp, it'll be disappointing, of course, and it will impact Tennessee's offense. But I think they've got the talent – guys like Jalen Hyatt that can step in there and stretch the field and make up for that loss. I think Tennessee is just better situated to handle losing a player at wide receiver than they are at these other positions.
We said it all last season. The system works, especially springing guys open. I mean, it's artful in its simplicity. I was really impressed the entire year because I was so skeptical of exactly how a quote unquote like gimmicky offense would be in the SEC, and it just worked. Like, that's it. And I think you're exactly right. Tillman is unbelievably important to this team, and I think he could have a huge career year and probably make himself some money potentially this coming year. I mean, you just look at Velus getting drafted. Like, he could make some money this year. But at the end of the day, you have Hyatt, like a Brew McCoy waiting in the wings. Who knows how that kid's gonna be, but a former five-star. And, you know, you have talent there that is going to be able to work in that system and be effective regardless. And so, yeah, you said it there. That's basically our number six in terms of most important players was really any mix. I mean, take your pick there. I think Tillman is the most obvious choice, but I think I could also make an argument for like a Princeton Fant, Jacob Warren at the tight end position, or whoever will be the most productive at the tight end position. Because if you could add in an effective tight end to this offense, that's an entire other wrinkle that is, you know, that just gives you that much more firepower. And so there's plenty to be said about the skill positions, because you can also go like the running backs were a huge Heupel ran the ball way more than I ever thought he was going to last year. The quarterbacks were a massively important position, but I just think the stuff that we listed, just the defense becoming exponentially better, Hooker taking that step forward and being even more of that guy, and the offensive line in front of Hooker, where you sort of go, who is going to fill those holes that are left at an incredibly important position? We just kind of felt like that trumped that, because you know that the wide receivers are going to get theirs. You know that the running backs are going to get theirs. When you run as many plays as Josh Heupel does, you give him as many chances as you're going to, just naturally, they're going to be a big part of this. So we just thought that these other players were just more important. Not that those guys aren't important, I guess you could say. But before we bounce out of here, we're going long, Zach. Any other thoughts on the top five players for Tennessee, most important players? And I'll throw it in here at the end. This was inspired by 247 Sports. They were doing a countdown of the most important players for Tennessee. I want to give credit where it's due. We're not trying to rip anybody off. But they've been doing a list. They're only at like number 11 or something. They're doing it in like a slow rollout. Don't know if we'll meet up, on any of those, but, I
have a feeling we'll meet up at number one for sure.
Yeah. I would question their credibility if we don't share a number one, but, they were the inspiration for this. But any other thoughts on the top five players?
Yeah, I think to go along with Gerald Mincy and the offensive line kind of there at number two, something that's going to be equally important to Tennessee's success this year, as much as Hendon Hooker and protecting him, will be picking up those short yardage plays.
Oh, yeah.
Those third and two when Tennessee wasn't able to convert there. That's the one place where Tennessee really has to evolve under Josh Heupel. They've got to figure out how to line up under center and just bulldoze their way forward for 2 or 3 yards and to be able to do that consistently. And that really starts with your offensive line, of course. I mean, you're running back where to go and to do in those situations. You got to be able to fall forward and pick up those extra yards. But it's really on the offensive line to create the running space for them. So that's something else there that Mincy and the rest of that offensive line will have to get better at this year for Tennessee to win 10 games if that's their goal.
Yeah, who's going to be the earth mover and who's going to be the running back that hits the hole in that scenario? Because is it Jalen Wright? I mean, I think Jabari Small is just that speed back. He's this, scat back, you know?
It might be Justin Williams, Justin Williams Thomas, the pickup that he's kind of a bigger on the bigger 6 foot, 200 pounds. He might be that guy. Maybe he steps up as a true freshman.
I do wonder. I mean, when they recruited him, I was kind of wondering if that might be the move as far as he goes, where at least you could get him involved as a freshman and say, you are this guy, be this guy for us, and kind of put that in his hands. And hopefully, you can't understate the difference that would make, especially when you look at the situations that Tennessee ended up facing last year, Purdue, right at the end there. You know, if you just had a guy who could have walked in to the end zone instead of having to stretch out and, you know, do all of that, you would have just won. And then it would have been that simple. So there's that. Top five most important players for Tennessee. Thanks to everybody for watching, for listening. Keep hitting up the YouTube. I enjoy that the most. The comments are the most interesting because we can actually get comments. You can't get comments on Spotify. I can't get them on Apple. I love having the comments. I want to post some stuff this week on the YouTube that involves maybe I'll post something about how Drinkwitz is a dork and see if I can get some Missouri fans. Although Missouri fans just don't care, man. They're just, they don't ever show up for anything like that. They're not up for a good Twitter fight. They're nowhere to be
seen.
They're
watching the Cardinals right now. They're not into college football year round like the rest of the SEC states seem to be.
Maybe I could make it about Brian Kelly and Drinkwitz and say that they're just like try-hard dorks. And we'll say something like that.
I don't know. The LSU fans will come out of hiding. I like to poke at them a little. My two favorite are Ole Miss and LSU because I love Ryan Lane Kiffin content. I don't know what it is, but it never gets old to me. And people click on it. So your comments saying like, what are you doing? Why are you writing this? You click on it. The numbers show that you do. So I'm probably going to keep doing it, but it's fun. I love it. And it's, LSU fans are right there in that same instance where you poke at Brian Kelly and they get real sensitive real fast. It's really funny if you think about it, the way that schools, Tennessee fans are as bad as anybody for it, the way they embrace a new coach those first year or two, and then how quickly they turn when things go south. And that's what's going to happen in Baton Rouge because Brian Kelly is not in the SEC.
If this season goes badly, like if it's like a 5-7 season, and he's going out and saying the Butch Jonesy type of stuff that he has said in the past, that is not going to go over well. No. And I'm excited. I hope it does. I hope it happens. I hope that the Tennessee goes into Death Valley, beats them. Maybe that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. That's the one where they're like, okay, we lost to Tennessee at home. This is not okay. We can hope. We can dream. That really would be the dream. Because you get to use it in a way. If you did that, you would kind of be exercising the Butch Jones demon a little bit because you're like stepping on his protege, making his life hard.
Real quick before we go, what do you think the more important game is for Tennessee this year? The game at home against Florida or the game at LSU in Baton Rouge? Like which of those wins do you think would be more monumental for Tennessee? Because look, they haven't beat Florida since 2016, and that's a team they play every single year, but winning in Death Valley is special, and Tennessee has not beat LSU in 17 years. I know they don't play them every year. They've only played 4 or 5 times since then, but it's been 17 years since you beat LSU. Which win do you think would be more monumental?
Splitting them, no matter which one is the win for Tennessee, would be huge.
Right, for sure.
Like, start there. But it has to be Florida, right? You got to get that monkey. Because that's the thing that has been standing so hard in your path in terms of getting Tennessee back. It's what it was in the mid-90s. You couldn't get over the Florida thing. Like, it's just always been that. Back then, it was what was standing between you and a national championship. Now, it's what's standing between you and just back to relevance. And if you can... We said it, a couple weeks ago. Make the Florida rivalry of football like Kentucky is with basketball now. You're regularly beating them. You kind of have their number. They still get you sometimes. Like, you know, it's always going to be extremely hard to win in the swamp across the board. That will never be an easy win, no matter how bad Florida might be. Unless they just turn into Vanderbilt, which I do not anticipate happening. So if you can get it to that point where you're winning almost always when it's in Neyland Stadium and even winning some of them in the swamp, like, that's how you turn this perception of Tennessee and the program as a whole. You can't have something like that hanging over you. LSU is just not a perpetual thing. It would be amazing to win in Death Valley, but you don't play them every year. It's not a quote-unquote like historical rivalry or anything like that, even though there have been incredible games between Tennessee and LSU. It doesn't hold that same weight. It's just got to be that Florida one, because you would lose to Florida, you lose at home against a team that you have better talent in now, and they have a first-year coach who a lot of people are pretty skeptical of. Again, go listen to what Barrett Salee had to say about Billy Napier last week. He was not very complimentary of Billy Napier. And so you just have everything working for you against Florida. I think a lot of people would look at Tennessee losing in Death Valley and go like, well, yeah, most people lose at LSU. You know, it's not that crazy of a thing to think might happen. So it's gotta be right. Florida.
It's close, but I feel like I'm with you on that just because it's Florida. But honestly, like you said, if they split and the win's in LSU, it's disappointing, but that's a pretty big win, even though LSU's kind of down in a way, which I don't think the LSU's going to be that down. I think they're still really talented. I still don't think they got the right coach, so we'll see how that goes.
If I kind of think about, I think the question for the season would almost be more, would you trade a loss to Missouri for wins over LSU and Florida both? Like, that's kind of the question that I ask is like, would you drop a stupid, weird one, but you win the big games?
Yeah. And Missouri's easy to swallow because it's Missouri. And like you said, nobody cares. You're not going to have a Missouri fans chirp at you. That would be a lot more catastrophic if it was South Carolina or Kentucky.
That's true. I don't know. We'll talk about it in the coming weeks. We'll have our predictions for the season about what we think. We got to keep the folks coming back. So join us once again for more of this premium content. And we're talking about, we might do maybe some live stream stuff coming up. I don't know. Zach and I are talking about it. We'll see what happens leading up to the season. We just want to get as much hype going as possible. And also, I'm going to be back doing the game day show with Jonathan Crompton this coming season. We got renewed for season number 2. A to Z decided to pick us back up. So it's going to be fun.
Season 2, premiering soon.
Yep. And look out for that. Otherwise, Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, this has been the Big Orange Podcast. Thanks so much to everybody for listening, watching, at Charlie_Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports.com, A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple, Spotify. I'm trying to kill time where my music opens up here so that I can play it, and there it is. All right, now we're good. Thanks to everybody again for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later. I tell you, I don't.